Good day, and welcome to today's conference call of the State-Based Reporting and Healthcare Initiative. Please note today's conference is being recorded. We'll also have a roll call in the beginning of today's discussion. Now I'd like to turn the conference over to Dr. Peter Angood. Please go ahead.
Great. Thank you very much, Anthony, and good afternoon or good morning, everybody. Appreciate very much your taking the time in your week, especially as we all continue moving into the fall season. If you're up from the Northeast area, it certainly feels crisp and cool already, and for those of you in other parts of the country, I'm sure it's starting to feel the same way. I recently just had that parenting experience of letting your oldest off to college for the first time, so we're very much into the fall spirit and new beginnings, new starts. But this particular initiative, I think, has definitely had some strong starts after our two face-to-face meetings and now our conference call schedule, which is warming up quite nicely. For all of you who participated in the survey that we asked for which topic areas would be of interest for you, thank you for participating in that. And I think as we show that a little bit later on, you'll see that we have a variety of opportunities for ongoing discussion amongst the state-based reporting groups as well as within the different federal agencies. For today's agenda, I think it's pretty robust. We have some excellent updates pending, and we will continue to cycle those updates around to the different states. We have a good discussion period framed up with a focus on the topic of auditing and data validation, and more on that as we get closer to that, and then we'll close out with some ongoing prompting and stimulation, if you will, and looking for ways that this initiative can foster some collaborative activity. So with those as my early opening comments, I would like to turn this back to Eric Colchimaro for a quick roll call to see who all is now on the call. And as Eric wraps that up, I will ask Eric to show the survey results from that online survey of topics. And once we've finished that, then we'll move into the updates and we'll introduce the various speakers at that time. So again, thank you very much for joining us. We look forward to a good interactive dialogue and discussion today as we continue to move forward with this, what's turning out to be a very important and strong initiative. So Eric, thank you.
Thank you, Peter. Just pulling up the list of participants right now in the state group. If, as you hear your name, if you could please just indicate present. And Anthony, all of these folks who were going through the roll call now should be on the speaker's line if they are not otherwise. Kathleen Billingsley?
Yes.
Terrific. Elizabeth Bake?
Yes.
Mike Deering?
Yes.
Mary Driscoll? Or someone? Is there someone from Illinois here in her place? Okay. Sydney Edlund?
Present.
Anne Flanagan?
Present.
Linda Furquet? Thought we had Linda on the line before, but maybe she'll come back and join us here in a moment.
Oh, here I am. Here I am.
Oh, terrific. Hi, Linda.
Hi.
Marie Kokel? Marie had emailed me saying she might be a little bit late, so I'll expect her to join in a little bit. Margaret Lumia? Shara Merritt? Stacy Mitchell?
Here.
Jose Montero? John Morley? And going to the next page of this list, I'm pulling up here. We have Sue Neff, or someone from Colorado. Mary Noble?
Here.
Leslie Poole? Or someone from Georgia? Ann Reed told me, emailed me she will not be present. Diane Rydrick? Lynn Searles?
Present.
Kalia Shaheen? Darlene Skorsky from Rhode Island? Julia Spaulding? Nevada. Bob Stahl, South Dakota. Bob emailed me. He was running into court, but should be here shortly. Cheryl Terrio.
This is John Olson. I'll be speaking for Connecticut today.
Terrific. Thank you, John. Iona Tryon from Utah. Renee Webster, Maryland.
Here.
Terry Whitson.
Yeah, I'm here.
Terrific. Welcome, Terry. And then Dr. Fasa Waldo. Okay. Thank you all. And again, Anthony, if any of those folks are on the audience line, please transfer them into the speaker's line at this time. And now, just a quick review of the survey. If folks remember, we sent out a survey to the state working group folks immediately following the June 28th conference call, just to gauge their interest in different topics and how they would like to move forward and subjects for future calls. The items you see up were our core suggestions, and we broke it down into the average or the mean and then the standard deviation, so you can see what level of disagreement there was there. Just a little reminder for the statistics background, the numbers with the higher standard deviation means that there was a little bit more of a variation in people's responses. So the top subjects were patient safety measures and how states can effectively utilize them in their reporting, auditing and data validation, which we'll go over today, developing standard definitions for event reporting, something we talked about at the last call, about how there's a lack of unanimity among the different states about when something reaches a level of a particular adverse event, so getting standards for that. Role for consumers came in fourth. And again, all of these were rated 1 to 5, or that's what we had asked. And then HAI action plans at 3.64. So you can see these first five here to the left, the patient safety measures, auditing and data validation, developing standard definitions, role for consumers, and HAI action plans were the five highest. And the first two with the lowest standard deviation, the patient safety measures and auditing and data validation seem to be of particular interest to folks. So definitely a good range of responses. We got responses from 24 out of the 27 states, I believe, and good material to help us move forward as we set the agendas for future calls.
Great. Thanks very much, Eric. That's quite helpful and I think insightful. In trying to decide which topics to move forward with early, we took into account what are some of the other active initiatives that are going on and felt that perhaps bringing those in at a later time would be more optimal as opposed to just bringing them in on rank order here. Additionally, as we continue with this initiative, it'll be interesting for us as National Quality Forum to try and decide where's the educational piece that's a role that we as NQF can really fulfill versus what are some of the issues that are really of practical importance for everyone who's doing reporting, but might be perhaps out of the realm of this current discussion and dialogue forum. So we'll keep moving forward with that. Today's topic we thought was particularly important because it, in some level, has come in the discussion at each of our previous sessions, and that is, what do we have to deal with in terms of non-reporting, or how do we minimize non-reporting? How do we stimulate increased reporting? And then once we get information, how do we validate that data, and how do we double-check that is realistic information that's being portrayed for us? Because significant decisions are being made on the data as it comes in. And as we all know, the reporting strategies basically are voluntary at these days, and even with robust reporting in some of the states, we still recognize there is some under-reporting occurring in those realms. So that will form the basis of our decision-making in terms of future topic areas, and we'll pulse the group from time to time as to which ones would be most appropriate for the next set of discussions. In terms of today, we've had a variety of states give brief updates, excuse me, and we plan on rotating three or four state updates for each of our calls so that everyone gets the opportunity to give the others in the group some insights as to what's going on in their particular state. What are the good issues? What are the difficult issues? What are the changes? So we're going to do this as a way to continue trying to show where some of the common issues or the common problems are, so that over time, hopefully, there'll be able to be a smoother interaction, if you will, between the various states as improved understanding of what everyone's up to occurs. And then as our representatives from the different federal agencies listen in, that will also be able to, we hope, stimulate some discussion up and down from the state level into the federal agencies as well. And as you all recognize, the serious reportable events from NQF, the Patient Safety Organization Initiative from ARC, and the HAI Action Plan, as it comes out of the Office of Quality, how do those all impact state-based reporting is a significant issue for everyone. So with that, on the update side, Bill Nunez and I will provide some comments from both ARC as well as NQF, but we've asked Linda Furkey and John Olson and Lynn Searles to provide some brief updates from each of their states. And Linda, John, and Lynn, if, as you get started, you can just provide a brief introduction of the role that you play in your state, that would be helpful. And we'll just go in the order as listed on the agenda. So we'll do Linda, John, and Lynn. So Linda, would you mind if you're available?
I'm here. Good afternoon, everyone. I am from the state of Washington. I am the Patient Safety Adverse Event Officer here. I am the only employee that actually does adverse event reporting. I receive reports from a number of medical healthcare facilities, and then I review the RCAs. And I chose a couple things that I wanted to give an update about. I'd like to tell you about that here in Washington, we worked really hard to bring up an adverse event website. And in early August, we sent out a press release about the website, and it certainly created quite a stir. The website was hit over 7,500 times during the month of August. Previously, it had received about 500 hits per month. Since the press release, several reporters and even patients and their families have called searching for more information about adverse events. Most were disappointed when they saw what we produced and were expecting to find more than just count information on the website. On the website, we actually published for the first time our check-in survey results. It has taken close to a year to make that process work well. And what it consists of is that we implemented this survey. And we ask facilities to notify us. We cannot require them. We have to ask them to notify us every 3 months whether or not they had an adverse event. We have them. We send them an email survey, an opinion survey, and we follow up with healthcare facilities that do not respond. And after working with the hospital association and now we're going to start working with the Ambulatory Surgery Center Association. We finally came to hearing from 100% of hospitals, 100% of psych hospitals, 100% of childbirth centers, the correctional medical facilities, and so far 80% of the ambulatory surgery facilities. So we view I view this as very positive because it certainly has initiated a great deal of many questions, and I believe I'm getting more phone calls from facilities. What sweetened the reason to be involved in this was the last legislative session. There was a bill that was proposed that would fine facilities $1,000 a day for not reporting. So I have to tell you, we reminded them of that when we called them and asked them if they wanted to participate. And lo and behold, we're getting a really good response. The Hospital Association did the same. The last thing I'd like to share with you is my counterpart, David Birnbaum, who is the program manager for the Healthcare-Associated Infections Program here at here in Washington, asked me to provide a short little info bite for you folks. He wanted you to know that, if you didn't know already, that the Healthcare-Associated Infections Program has developed a sustainable, statistically and sound validation program that's consistent with the ISO standards for sampling by attribute. He thought that this comprehensive technical manual is in the final stages of development. It describes the methods and underlying theory and step-by-step instructions to put into practice, as well as operating characteristic curves. This one is focused on the need to validate the accuracy of hospital surveillance for central line-associated bloodstream infections, but it could be adapted to other infection sites. If you're interested, please send me an email, and I will forward them to David, and he can discuss it with you further. And that's my report for this afternoon. Thanks.
Great, Linda. Thanks very much. Some perfect timing and some very, I think, important nuggets in there. I think in terms of trying to make sure everybody gets some fair airtime, we'll go through each of the presentations. But as we have in the other sessions, we do want this to be interactive. So if you have questions for Linda, John, or Lynn, please write them down, and we'll get to you as soon as we wrap those presentations up. A great presentation, Linda. Thanks. John from Connecticut?
Yes. Hello, everyone. I am an epidemiologist in the Connecticut Department of Public Health, and I write the annual reports, and I do the analysis of the electronic database. We have also a nurse who is not with us today, Cheryl, who receives paper reports and who also is the person that the hospitals and other facilities contact with adverse event reports. So I'm somewhat removed from that, although I am on, I'm in contact with Cheryl, you know. So what Connecticut has done, in 2002 we started the adverse event reporting system, and in 2004 we adopted the NQF list along with five or six Connecticut specific events. And in 2010 we added another Connecticut specific category, which is surgery resulting in death or serious injury that's not otherwise reportable. And we've had six reports in that category since January of this year. We also have had legislation passed in the most recent legislative session that mandated some changes that will take effect in 2011, specifically facility-specific reporting in the annual report. Up till now, when I've done the counts and the reports, I just give an aggregate for the state, but next year we will have to give facility level counts and do some rate calculations, which the legislature even defined for us how we would present that based on patient days. Some other changes recently. We started using the electronic database for vital records as a screening tool for possible unreported adverse events. That would only apply to fatal adverse events, which are about 10% of the reports that we receive. And so far we have not found anything that's reportable but not reported based on those, but that's only been going on for a few months. And maybe I should stop there, and I think I'll be available for questions later.
Great. Thanks, John. Certainly lots going on in Connecticut as well. Another move afoot by a state to get into facility-specific public reporting, which is always nice to see. I am intrigued with the specificity of the rate calculations, so clearly there was some good, strong lobbying going on at some level. And then this dovetailing to other databases as a screening tool, somewhat unique. I like that idea. So I look forward to the questions on that. Great. Okay, now Lynn Searles from Kansas, are you able to give us your report?
Yes. I'm the risk management specialist over the Kansas Mandatory Risk Management Program that covers all of our hospitals and ambulatory surgery centers. And it's been in operation for more than 20 years. We have statutes that, for political reasons, they aren't going to touch. So the only thing that we're able to really make any changes on at this time is our regulations. As far as public reporting, our whole system is confidential and privileged. It's not discoverable. So, and that's, again, by statute. So that's one of the things, challenges that we have here in Kansas. We are working I'm a member of the Kansas Healthcare Acquired Infection Advisory Group, and so we're working on some public reporting through that entity. And then I also work education with the providers and surveyors and try to help with those things. But because of our statutes, it has kind of tied our hands on some of the things we can do. We do have some positive things. We have some providers that are going way above and beyond what is required by our program. And, of course, we have some, even though it's mandatory, that don't seem to be participating, so we're working with those. We do have funding, again, statutory, $200,000, which is modest for some. I know out there and for others you're thinking, gee, you're lucky. And at this point in time, it has seemed to be covering our expenses, so we have been fortunate in that route. At this time, even with our system as it is, we do not have really electronic reporting, even on the privileged and confidential portion. They do turn in statistically quarterly reports and also adverse event reports that are reviewed. We do on-site surveys, all those type things, but again, keeping it privileged and confidential. And our goal someday is to, at least so that the provider can, when they fill out the report online, they can actually submit on our website at that time. We still aren't able to do that. So we've got some good things going, but we got a lot of work to do as any place else, and we're also trying to figure out a foolproof method for buy-in for the facility and for individuals within the facility who are non-compliant. So I'm open to questions and suggestions.
Great. That's also a very nicely done report. Thank you so much, Lynn. I had, not quite registered in my mind that you guys had such a long history of reporting, and yet you've got these constraints as you describe them. So I'm sure that must feel a little bit frustrating on occasion.
It does become challenging.
I think you're being kind. So, well, let's open it up for some questions and discussion at this period. And I'm curious, to help get things going, I'll ask John again regarding this, the specificity of the legislation as it got all the way down to telling you what rate calculations you need to do. And the reason I'm intrigued by that is we recently have completed, and it's just going for our board approval, a framework report on the issues of public reporting for patient safety events. And our steering committee, while we pushed them several times, you know, the field would really like to have some specific recommendations on how we should report. You know, what are the rates, or when should rates be used, when should rates not be used, et cetera, et cetera. And the steering committee actually did not want to go that specific because their feeling was the evidence and the medical literature to support it just is not consistently there. So what was sort of going on in Connecticut to got that happen?
Well, I can't tell you what the legislature was thinking. I can tell you what they wrote, which were they defined the numerator and the denominator for the rate. And in this case, we have both hospitals and ambulatory or outpatient surgical facilities reporting. And so the definition of the rate is going to be different to reflect the fact that they're not reporting in the same patient population. For the hospitals, it's based on inpatient days, and that at least is easy enough to get also from our billing discharges database for the number of inpatient days. For the ambulatory surgical centers, it's information that we would have to specifically request from them, such as the number of surgeries that they perform. But again, I understand it's a kind of a composite of, or at least it wasn't defined in so much detail as to whether we had to separate colorectal surgery from cardiovascular surgery, or whether they'll just all be considered how many surgeries they do in the center. That perhaps is left to the discretion of the department. But the legislation does, as I say, define how we calculate these rates. Now, what they mean, this is an issue because you might think, well, once you have rates, then you can compare the facilities with each other, or if not that, you can at least compare them to themselves over time. And there are problems with that, which I'm not sure if the legislature is fully cognizant of them. They mention also contextual factors, which they also define, which include the payer mix for the hospital, and they allow other information not specified in the legislation, but I can already think of age, because there's a tendency for older patients to have more comorbidities and to also suffer more reportable adverse events. So that would be a natural contextual factor to include. But even there, there is the problem of we'll either call it completeness of reporting or some other way to reflect that there's a variation, which is a tricky subject to talk about. And the expectation might be that if a hospital reports no events, that could either mean that they are very safe and didn't have any events, or there isn't a culture of reporting, and disentangling these is between difficult and impossible. And so then the question is, what does it mean to have a rate? Does it is it good to be high or low? And we can't say that at this point.
Yeah, no, we all struggle with that. That's for sure. But the fact that it came into place, I thought, was fascinating. How about others on the call? Others with similar examples or other questions for the other two speakers?
Hi, this is Ann Flanagan in Maine. Thank you very much for this opportunity. This is a wonderful education for me. I have a question for John about the reference to the electronic database that would be used to determine reporting.
Yes.
I wasn't clear on what that was exactly.
We are still paper-based in our reporting because some of the hospitals are not capable of doing it otherwise. So we have a system that all the hospitals can comply with. So we get paper reports, and then they are entered by hand into an electronic database. And that's what I analyze, is the electronic. So I don't see the paper reports, although someone else here deals with the paper reports, and then the third person is the one who enters it.
So the determination of underreporting is based on the denominator and numerator that were selected by the legislature?
You're saying the determination of underreporting? Is that what you said?
I thought there was reference that you made to the electronic database and underreporting.
Well, I'm saying that that's a... We can't determine whether there's underreporting, except to the extent that I said we're screening death certificates, which are electronic also. They're, you know, there's an electronic database, and that's where we can actually see that there is underreporting. If something... if there is a death and a cause of death, and then we follow that because we have certain cause of death codes that are likely to be connected to adverse events, and then if we see that that's not reported but met the criteria, then we'd say that that was definite underreporting.
Okay, thank you.
Otherwise, I can't. Then I'm just speculating other than those.
Right.
Okay, other questions, other comments?
This is Diane from Minnesota. Just to follow up on that question, we also review death records, but I find that we end up having to go through kind of a manual process searching for certain words in the electronic death records to see if, you know, an embolus comes up and then looking a little bit more deeply. Do you have a program that you use for that or certain codes that you, you know, run a program on to see what gets flagged in your death records, so it's a less manual process?
Right now the program is entirely based on ICD-10 codes for the, I can tell you what the codes are. We don't use keywords, at least not yet. We haven't tried that.
Okay,
thanks.
So maybe a combination of the ICD-9 or 10 and or CPT and or keywords. That's a lot of work all of a sudden in a database. But that this concept of using other databases as screening, looking for markers out there, is actually an intriguing concept.
Well, I just have a question. This is Diane again. I just have a question for the group. We've just started looking at Medicaid administrative data in our state from our Department of Human Services to see if they can successfully flag. We're starting with just retained foreign objects. Is anyone else using that approach as a cross-check?
This is Sydney from Oregon. We've talked about doing something along those lines, but we don't. We are a quasi-governmental organization at the Patient Safety Commission, so we don't actually have access to administrative data right now. So that's our first step, is to get access to that data, and then that's one of the first things that we want to be able to do.
Okay.
Diane, this is Renee in Maryland. And we've looked, the state of Maryland's looked at data from our database, discharge databases, to look at it for our pay-for-performance type program, because Maryland is exempt from the CMS denial of payment for certain cases because we have a Medicare waiver. We are actually kind of taking a different tactic towards it and giving hospitals more money if they don't meet, you know, if they're below the state threshold that's established. So they're looking for the events through that. We've done some cross-checking with some of those.
And have you uncovered any underreporting that way?
We've found some, but not, it hasn't been as successful as we would have guessed. We had to, but it did help them root through a lot about what cases should be looked at for this pay-for-performance, where we could eliminate certain types of infections and certain types of cases that should be considered as they went forward on this.
Okay. Thanks.
Linda, as you guys have rolled out your fairly new program with your survey tools and then there's the penalty system now into place, have you guys looked at this utilization of other databases to cross-reference?
Hi, this is Linda speaking, and I'd like to clarify that there, you know, that the plan for fining never passed the legislature, so there's no fining in place.
Okay, I'm sorry, I misheard that then.
Well, I think that I led you on. It might have been a help, but the threat alone helped with our check-in process. No, at this point, we have not looked at any other databases. I will share with you that I know that nationally there is the Dead by Mistake website that Hearst is using. Is presenting, is looking at our hospital discharge data, and they are searching for adverse events. They're also going through death certificates, and they're also looking at just press reports in communities and airing that. And sharing that they're finding some information. But no, we have not done it here at the state, but it's being done for us by the press, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I just got interviewed by those guys last week again, mm-hmm. And heard all about your stories and what they're up to. And if you haven't checked out, any of you, this Dead by Mistake website, it's informative in some ways, but also somewhat inflammatory in other ways. But it's certainly, I think, important to be aware of its existence out there. In the interest of time, because we've got some other presentations, I think we'll move ahead. But there was some good discussion, and by all means, keep up on the electronic email discussions afterwards as well. Bill Mounier, have you been able to get on with us now?
Yeah, sure. Actually, I've been on the whole time. And Peter, I'll try to make this extremely brief in the interest of the call. With respect for an update from the Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality, or ARC, for those of you that may be new on the call this time, we usually what we address in these calls are our work on what are called the common formats, which are common definitions and reporting formats for at the current time patient safety events that are authorized under the Patient Safety and Quality Improvement Act, or the PSO program, and those common formats were, ARC was authorized to promulgate common definitions and reporting formats really for all of quality and safety across all settings in support of the PSO program so that people would count things the same way. And while they are authorized for PSOs, they are able to be used by anybody. And so we have gone through a process where we've gotten all of the agencies in the federal government, not just HHS, but also the DOD and the VA with their health programs, as well as public comment and private sector organizations to support and add to the common formats for reporting. And we started with patient safety events in hospitals. We are hoping that they will end up being found useful by people to begin the concept of thinking of reporting from the standpoint of the user, namely, in this case, the hospitals, rather than the standpoint of the person who's getting the report, as we see an increasing proliferation of especially interest reporting. So in fact, within the past week, a draft legislation for yet another siloed effort at reporting for a particular interest. And all of these are important, but if you fragment the reporting into every subject area that for which reports are useful, you end up getting a hospital having to potentially use a large number of systems, each one designed by a special interest and with overlapping and irreconcilable ways of reporting common things. So the common formats are an attempt to allow reporting on all kinds of events so that from the user standpoint, you can use one reporting system to report all events, and we'll get smarter as a nation by upgrading the common formats to reflect not only changes in science, but recommendations from users. So having said that as a summary, let me quickly zero in on two specific areas to give you an update on the current version of common formats, which are available both in terms of paper, what the concepts are, and also electronic specifications for vendors to use. We're in the process of working on the next version, and there are two highlighted areas. One are patient safety events dealing with IT. There's been a lot of national interest in what kinds of things can go wrong with IT. In other words, electronic health record, a CPOE system, a device, an implantable device or whatever, where IT is involved and actually contributes to the harm to the patient. And there have been hearings on this and so on and so forth. And so ARC is in the process of working with the Food and Drug Administration, which has jurisdiction over device reporting, and the Office of the National Coordinator, which has jurisdiction over the expansion of electronic health records in the country. And the three agencies are working together to essentially upgrade the common format dealing with devices to add an IT component. We will be publishing that for public comment. We're working with the government agencies right now. We will be publishing that for public comment later on, probably at the end of October. And so if you're on our listserv, which now numbers nearly 30,000 people, you'll get a notification about that when that happens. We're excited about it because it's essentially an expansion of an already existing format dealing with devices, just to expand it and get more granular, more detail about information technology in those devices or information technology devices. The other area to talk about is healthcare-associated infections, where there's a great deal of interest right now about reporting that because they have been part of the patient safety picture, and specifically CDC, for a long time. Now they're being commingled with reimbursement issues as reporting on central line infections is becoming part of the CMS IPPS system, where first quarter data for 2011 is going to have to be collected on central line infections and submitted to CMS for that first quarter no later than August 15th if hospitals wish to receive the market basket update for reimbursement, and obviously there's going to be a high level of interest in that. Our common formats are consistent with CDC's NHSN, but they are not as complete as NHSN, and we've been wrestling with whether we need to try to mimic every jot and tittle of NHSN or whether we need to just be consistent with it and allow downloading from NHSN. And we've been back and forth on this a number of times and discussed that with some of you on the phone in some detail. At the moment, it looks like probably it's not a good use of our resources to try and provide an alternative to NHSN, so we will remain consistent and allow a download from NHSN in order to have the complete set of events that are collected by people using the common formats also populated by healthcare-associated infections. It does perpetuate dual reporting systems, and we don't think that's ideal, but at the moment we aren't probably in a position to solve that problem. So we're working with CDC on those issues, and we'll try to, in the future, coordinate things as much as possible. Along a similar note, I would mention that we are trying to coordinate with FDA so the device reporting can be accomplished through the common formats and forwarded on to FDA, although we are a ways away from being able to declare that a done deal. But the overall, what we are trying to work for is simplifying the life of the people in the hospitals who actually have to do this. And so to the extent to which we can